You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are continuing our Set Apart to Serve conversations today. The episode of Coffee Hour today is underwritten in part by Concordia University Irvine. You can learn more about Concordia University Irvine by visiting cui.edu. Joining us today, the Reverend Don Stein. He's pastor at St. Andrew in Rockton, Illinois. Pastor Stein, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, it's a pleasure. Thank you. Good morning. Good to be with you both.
Thank you for stepping aside. I know you're in St. Louis for other meetings and you snuck out a little early so you could come hang out with us in the studio, and we appreciate you spending time with us, making that sacrifice. We appreciate it.
You know, coffee hour is important, right? It's the other Lutheran sacrament.
It's true.
So tell us a little bit about where you serve, the congregation you serve, St. Andrew.
Yeah, I'm blessed to live very close to the Cheddar Curtain, right on the edge of border between Illinois and Wisconsin.
The Cheddar Curtain.
So I can go north and buy my favorite cheeses and come back.
I've never heard that before, but I'm totally stealing it.
Is this, do you go to the Brathaus, or no, what's the one right across the state line in Kenosha?
That's not Carmichael cheese. Which one is that? It's a good one though.
You don't know your cheese shops, do you, Sarah?
I can't eat dairy, so no,
I can't either anymore, but there was a time in my life when I could, so. But that's not the important thing. You serve St. Andrew.
I do. And what an awesome congregation it is. We've got people there who have been there practically their whole life. They were founded in 1962. It's a mission set up, and it's been growing ever since. And they built their current building in 98 or 95. I'm not able to go check the cornerstone outside. I don't remember. But it's a great church. We've been growing and doing well. Our children's ministry has just exploded these last 3 years. It's been a blessing. And God is really working through those people. It's amazing what they do when they see that the gospel actually changes lives. So we've been doing this wonderful, just a service to the community called Pumpkin Fest, right? We grow over 1,000 pumpkins and we give them all away on the church property. It's kind of awesome.
That's amazing. That's also very Northern Illinois.
It really is. It really is. If you think of like fall colors and pumpkins and everything else, that's our part of the world. It's made for that. Yeah. They say Boston in the fall is beautiful, but they haven't been to Northern Illinois. That's why. Yeah. And so anyways, what I'm getting to is they're always giving back to the community, and it's really helped people see that Christians are actually about loving their neighbors, and we actually take Jesus' message to heart, and that gives us opportunities to share the gospel. It's been wonderful.
That sounds really fun. I love the idea of growing 1,000 pumpkins. How much space do you guys have? That's not a small amount of
area. I have gardening questions for you when we're done.
I'm not the one to ask. That goes to the other saints. Yeah, we sit on actually 17 acres.
Okay, yeah.
So when they planted the church, they had great foresight into what could happen in the future, and looking ahead helped a lot.
Yeah. That's amazing. I have a lot more questions about pumpkins, but that's not why we're here. So let's go back.
Cheese, pumpkins.
It's all about food. Andy's very happy right now.
Good morning.
We're here to talk about your journey into being a pastor, though, and you have not always been a pastor. You had a career, I mean, for obvious reasons, but also you had a career before this. Talk about what you were doing before you became a pastor.
Yeah, I had a life before pumpkins.
And wow.
It was great. After college, I moved out to Washington, D.C. I had done an internship there during my junior year of college, and they liked me enough that they kept it open for a year so I could go back, finish my degree, and then come back full time. And worked out there for what's called the Congressional Award, and it's a fantastic program. I still kind of hawk it, even though I don't work there, because I wish more people, and especially Lutherans, would take part in it. It's Congress's award for youth who are doing good things for their communities. Hmm. So there's four areas of the award. You do voluntary public service, personal development, and then an expedition exploration where you plan like a trip and you go somewhere. And then the fourth part of it is physical fitness. And so as long as kids are doing hours in these, they earn a congressional award. You can earn gold, silver, bronze medals. It's wonderful. And it looks really good, you know, on a resume for these kids to have these things. The coolest part is if a youth is involved at his church or her church, the personal development category is already being filled by just going to confirmation class. So, you know, if they plan a trip to the youth gathering or to a Higher Things conference or something like that, then they're already getting the expedition one done as well. So, you know, I can't help them with the physical fitness, but the other ones, you know, they can help out with, and they can get this award from the Congress of the United States. And it's just really cool. But sorry, you were asking how I got all this. I worked there. It was wonderful. It was a great place to work when you're 20 something and not the best place to start a family. My wife, who was then my fiance, living in Alexandria across the river from where I lived, even though it looks close on the map, that's a lot of space in city time.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of lonely out there, and we decided, you know, let's move back to the Midwest. We did. We ended up having a really great pastor who wouldn't leave us alone and kept making us do stuff for church, teaching Sunday school, then helping with catechism. And little by little, it became clear, I actually really, really love our Lutheran doctrine, and I kind of want to study it more. And so he said, why don't you go to seminary? And we did. So that's the story in a nutshell.
And that's quite a story. So what are some of those things you did in the parish? You said your pastor, like, wouldn't let go.
It's a good kind of pastor.
Encouraged you to serve in your parish. What are some of the ways that you served in your congregation before going to seminary?
Yeah, well, we didn't grow pumpkins at that church.
Oh, but, sad.
Yeah, I know. Could have been great. But they did have us help out a lot with Sunday school. And now that I'm a pastor, I understand why this is such a need for somebody to take the time to actually be with the kids so that they can have a face they recognize who's not just the pastor. Everybody wants to talk to the pastor, but there's not that much time in a day. So having those wonderful Christian volunteers who are willing to step up goes a long way. So I helped out a lot with Sunday school, with catechesis, helping the kids memorize their catechism, and then little things like bringing donuts. Somebody's got to do it.
It's true.
Yeah. And so we had a lot of fun just getting involved in church. We had a small group that met every other week and prayed for each other and helped watch each other's kids, and church kind of became the third place in our lives. You know, you've got your work and your home, and then church was always where we wanted to be. And so I've kind of taken that into ministry for us too. We're trying to make the church a place where people can actually gather and do things together.
That is really incredible when the church becomes that third space that you just kind of like, oh, I don't want to be home. I'm not going to go to work. Let's go to church. Do something with people we actually like. So
yeah,
that's excellent. You said that all of the things that you got involved in church, that kind of made you realize that you wanted to become a pastor. What was that that decision process like for you and your wife thinking about? Because, I mean, that's not a small life change to go to seminary to enter into a new vocation. What was that process like for you guys?
And especially by that time, we had two kids and we owned a home. So we would be giving everything up to go do this. It became this constant struggle because I wanted to serve. I wanted to do more. But at the same time, you know, there was the reality of life. And I had waffled back and forth on whether to do it. And at one point I had considered the SMP program because then I could have stayed with my very comfortable government job and just stuck it out. Eventually, my waffling was enough that my wife pulled a Katie Luther and took the hinges off the door and said, all right, that's it. I quit my job. We're moving to St. Louis. Let's just go.
I like your wife.
No, behind every halfway decent man, there is an amazing woman. So I have to blame her for what we're doing now.
So let's talk about that transition then to seminary. Any preparation prior to seminary? Any language classes or theological
Greek
study? I mean, obviously, you've been well catechized and serving in your congregation, but any other preparation prior to coming to seminary?
Yeah, you know, I wish I would have done more. My undergrad was not in languages. That would have been immensely helpful. But I did meet with my pastor every Saturday. We'd get up at about 5 in the morning and just talk for the first hour and a half of the day. And it was wonderful just sitting with him and going through scripture. And it wasn't even just a structured Bible study. It was just time in the Word devotionally. And that was really helpful in my formation, learning how to read the scriptures in that way. We did work on a little bit of Greek. And so by the time I got to seminary for the crash courses, I could at least sound out the words that I was reading. Hebrew was a different story. That took some time. When it comes to preparation, it was a little bit of like quick language learning and then reading through a couple of books, the Called to Be series, which is the preparation packet that they have for pre-seminarians. That was really helpful too.
Yeah. I also had to read those for entrance exams for deaconess. Those are not small books.
No. And do deaconesses take the similar ELCEs that we do?
Yeah.
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 Oof, that Old Testament one.
Oh, man. That was terrifying. So the transition to seminary, you guys moved to St. Louis?
We moved near St. Louis.
Uh-huh.
We had our dogs, and we didn't want to part our girls from our dogs. We found a parsonage on the Illinois side that was unoccupied, and the church was willing to let us stay in it so long as we did some service to the church in addition to what we would normally be doing for RFE work, resident field worker education. And so we cleaned some toilets every week and mopped some floors, and it was worth it. And we got to know and love the people who were at that church. It was almost like a 3-year vicarage. It was wonderful.
That's really amazing. That's a great situation to be in. Tell us about entering seminary, the first year school again. What was all of that like, that transition into being a student again for you and for your wife and kids?
Yeah, the second career stuff is tough because all the younger guys, they're still in learning mode. They're able to pick things up like a sponge. And I can remember my first day of summer Greek coming in and suffering through the first section of it. And then taking the break as everybody else is going to get a drink and refresh themselves, I go to the restroom and I'm staring in the mirror thinking, what have I done? I'm not going to be able to keep up with this. I've moved my wife and children to another place. We don't even have a home to own, and I don't know if I can do this. And mercifully, one of the professors happened to be there and kind of saw that I was having a moment and took me aside and talked it through. He was a wonderful father to me those next 4 years, and it was great. And so then I went back into the room and took the first quiz and proceeded to misspell my name. So took a little bit to get back to it, but we got there.
That's amazing.
Were there points off for misspelling your name?
Mercifully not. No, the good thing is Jesus knows my name, and that counts. So
it does.
Other joys, challenges, highlights from your formation at seminary?
You know, a lot of formation happens in the class and with professors, and much of it happens in the daily devotion in chapel, but there's also something that just, it's not quantifiable, that happens outside, just being in community with the brothers. In-person formation is huge. And I don't think I realized that coming into seminary, just how much I would love that community and how much that brotherhood and sisterhood would grow. I'm grateful for it.
We're talking with Pastor Don Stein of St. Andrew Lutheran Church in Rockton, Illinois. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment right here on the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Concordia University Irvine, you have the freedom to explore your future and your faith. Across over 60 on-campus and online programs, you'll experience Christian education that's uniquely designed to develop the whole person, to prepare you not just for your career, but for all of your callings in life. Here you'll explore life's toughest questions, gain lifelong skills, and make relationships that last a lifetime. Concordia University Irvine. Learn more at cui.edu.
Welcome back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are in our Set Apart to Serve conversation today with Pastor Don Stein of St. Andrew Lutheran Church in Rockton, Illinois. Second career pastor. We're talking about his path back to seminary after a first career and now a growing family and relocating to St. Louis to attend Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, and what that formation looked like, that growing time, those experiences happening in formation at seminary. What would you say are some of the challenges that you faced, whether it was simply as a seminary student or things particularly related to being a second career student? What are those challenges like, and who helped you overcome those hurdles?
Yeah. You know, some of the challenges of being a second career guy are unique to that time in life. And I don't at all mean to belittle or demean what some of the younger guys go through. They're having their own struggles that are very difficult. Some of them are, you know, just getting married, learning how to balance all of that kind of thing. I'm grateful that I didn't have to shuffle all of that while I was there. But there's also a difficulty when you're coming back to something. You have a wealth of knowledge about how the world works and how different businesses operate. But at the same time, you have to guard yourself that you aren't imposing that upon the church. Mm. The church doesn't function in the same way that a business does, and remembering to let the gospel truly guide all of our actions. So I think that was a challenge, just forming a pastoral heart. I think that's probably the best phrase to describe it, because I had a heart that was used to working in the world. And I'm sure it's not an uncommon thing that guys are working through, but we grow older, we get hardened in our sin, we get used to the way things are supposed to be, and when they're not, it's tough. So that was probably the toughest readjustment.
What did you learn about yourself as as a Lutheran, as a leader in the church, as you were formed into the pastoral ministry? Because, I mean, it's a four-year process. There's stuff that happens over those 4 years. How are some of the things that you notice it that you just changed as a leader in the church over that time?
Yeah, you know, when I worked in D.C., I wasn't very good at my job. I got it done, but I wasn't very good at it. And as a pastor, a lot of times I feel I'm not very good at this either. My Greek is bad. My Hebrew is even worse. My English is passable on most days, and that keeps me going, which is nice. But the thing that I really realized about myself and about this position is that the only way I'm able to do this is by the grace of God. I know that sounds like a platitude, but it is so very, very real.
Tell us about your family making this transition as well from moving back to the Midwest and going to seminary, doing a vicarage and first call. Tell us about what that was like for your family.
Moving a family is tough. Moving a growing family is even tougher. And moving a growing family that has children at different ages and stages is, I don't need to do it again. But it did draw us closer together as a family. My children know that our home is safe, that wherever we are, that is home. And I think in a world that has lots of change all the time, giving the reassurance that mom and dad are always going to be there for them and are, no matter where we live, it ends up being really helpful. Our kids and our family grew together throughout that time. Yeah.
What are some of the things you found as great joy in being a pastor? I know we can talk about the challenges too if you want to, but there are joys in this vocation too.
Yeah, there is nothing like baptizing a baby. Oh. Nothing at all.
We cry at baptism.
I do too, big time. And we've been blessed to have many baptisms in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Nothing beats that feeling of pouring over the water and knowing that God's word is doing its work. That is amazing. And the other thing is going to be pumpkins.
Yes.
Giving away those pumpkins is just a blast. And it doesn't quite rise to the level of baptism, but seeing my people at my parish involved and doing things and actually loving being the church together is amazing.
That's got me thinking, what type of labor of love is this? I mean, that's a lot of pumpkins to grow. Tell me about the work that you see the saints at St. Andrew putting in to make this effort to serve the community in this way.
Yeah, well, to paraphrase St. Paul, you know, some of them have to plant, some of them have to water. I mean, you could go the whole gamut. Some of them got to sit there and pick the weeds, which is not easy. Yeah. Mm. We're taking all kinds of different people with all kinds of different backgrounds. We don't have that many farmers in the congregation, so we're taking their advice and then a whole bunch of people who know nothing about plants being told how to fix it, how to do it, which is kind of a really good metaphor for Christian life, where, yeah, you know, we've got one man who's done it right and he knows what to do and we're trying to follow what he says. And there's a whole lot of grace for when we don't follow.
I'm just curious in terms of hours.
Oh.
Hours of people laboring to serve in this way. What's your job when it comes to growing all the pumpkins?
Well, I am present. I cannot take any credit. No, this has been a labor of love, especially for Lisa. If you're listening, we're so grateful for your work and the family of Dave Grass. Those two families have done so much work. God be praised for them.
How early do you start planting? I know nothing about planting pumpkins.
You usually plant in about June.
Okay.
But you don't want it to be too hot.
Well, good luck with that.
I'm not sure it would work so well down here.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Pumpkins are fun, but let's talk about how your skills, your talents, your experiences in your first career, helped you in a way in a pastoral career. That's, you know, one thing with second career church work, you have skills in a different area that you bring with you, and in some way they tend to be applicable. Are there ways that you've found those things that you learned to be helpful for you now?
Yeah. One of the things that I really learned working out in the world was, number one, managing people. I had interns that worked for me, and, you know, interns in D.C. are even lower than staffers in D.C., which is just not a pleasant place to be. And so to treat them with respect and dignity and to see them as a human being goes a long way. And that applies directly to public ministry. As long as you are acknowledging people, learning their names goes so far. Visiting them outside of just work hours, but recognizing that they have a life. Let's see what that's like. Asking them questions. those are the kind of soft skills that apply directly to ministry. And then comes like basic management and policy. That was really what I did a lot of. And press writing was my other big piece. So that, you know, writing clearly and succinctly in, you know, 800 words or less for most news columns, suddenly this is being applied directly to a sermon. And I can say something in, you know, 1,000 words that maybe others would take twice as much to say. Directly and clearly communicating has helped a lot.
Yeah.
What's your encouragement to men who might think they might be suitable for seminary and pastoral ministry?
Start forming a pastoral heart. The knowledge will come, the teaching will come. Form the pastoral heart. Start doing those daily devotions. If you're married, start praying with your wife, with your family. Do those bedtime and morning devotions. Get yourself in the Word. Because without that pastoral heart, nothing else matters. You can preach with the tongues of angels, but if you don't have love, it's pointless. You're just a clanging gong.
Our guest today, the Reverend Don Stein, pastor of St. Andrew Lutheran Church in Rockton, Illinois. Thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thanks for letting me be here with you. It was a pleasure.
You can learn more about Set Apart to Serve by visiting lcms.org/SAS. You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.